I Hate the News is the weekly news analysis from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I am Sunil Dasgupta. In the news for March 5th, 2024, Montgomery County reverses its stand on cooperating with federal immigration on how to deal with undocumented criminals in their custody. The future of rent stabilization, nonprofit religious and educational institutions to be allowed to build affordable housing on land they own if new laws pass. State woes with the Transportation Trust Fund. And the most bizarre case of abuse of judicial process. Music for this episode comes from DC songwriter and composer Oren Levine. The songs on this episode are recorded with the band Lucky So-and-So and written with Paula Bailey and Artemis. Stay with us. After several years of not cooperating with federal immigration authorities during the Trump administration's harsh and inhumane approach to immigration enforcement, Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich has reversed course. Buffeted by criticism of his public safety approach, Elrich met with Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement ICE officials last week and agreed that the county will inform federal agents more than 48 hours before releasing into the community individuals who are on the ICE detention list. Under the Biden administration, the detainer list has comprised persons with serious criminal histories who are taken into ICE custody for deportation after the county releases them. The shift in county policy received most attention among anti-immigration groups, and together with growing right-wing interest in local school politics, the latest being how the school district trains substitute teachers on gender and identity. Montgomery County, Maryland, which used to be able to sit out the culture wars for a decade or more, is finding itself enmeshed in it again. Rent stabilization was one of the biggest housing policies of 2023, and we covered the issue extensively across several episodes. Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and Washington, D.C., roughly half the D.C. metro market was covered by rent control. The details varied greatly. In D.C., for example, no new buildings are subject to any rent control. But in 2024, the Howard County Council rejected a new rent stabilization bill. It is unclear if rent advocates overreached with a especially strict menu of rent control measures or the broader tide is turning. Prince George's County's rent stabilization law sunsets in April, and proponents are rallying for a permanent law just like Montgomery County passed in 2023. Meanwhile, Montgomery County's Department of Housing and Community Affairs has released the actual regulations based on the law, and they are open for public comment. The show notes include a link to the regulations. If you are affected either as a tenant or a landlord or have a public policy take on the details of the new regulations, please reach out at producer@ihppod.org. Montgomery County and the state of Maryland are both considering allowing nonprofit, religious, and educational institutions to build affordable housing on land they own. For many old churches and educational institutions, especially those who have lost membership and students, this presents an opportunity to use their assets to revitalize their organizations. For local and state government, there now seems to be an inexorable trend towards liberalizing decades-old zoning standards. First, accessory dwelling units, ADUs, were permitted. Now, nonprofit, religious, and educational organizations are likely to be allowed to build. Will all of this add up to address the region's housing shortage problem? In theory, yes. We did an episode on ADUs in 2023 about why more people are not building them. Turns out they are expensive to build. And in part because the law deliberately keeps their size to a small percentage of the main home on the property, which means that construction costs suffer from diseconomies of scale. For the nonprofit zoning change, there are affordability limits, location limits, and even height and use limits. If and when this law passes county and state legislatures, we will see if the economics works out. My personal expectation is that these laws will take several years to get right. So two lessons. Incrementalism wins, and writing new law is an experiment and involves trial and error. Two major reasons why so many misunderstand and hate politics. We all knew that the ongoing Maryland General Assembly session was going to have to consider revenues. Governor Wes Moore has been telescoping the revenue crunch for many months now. There is a State of the Economy report from the Maryland Comptroller's Office which shows a slowing down and even loss of population. But the governor has also ruled out new taxes while cutting projects to balance the state's transportation trust fund, which collects Maryland's gas taxes, highway tolls, and vehicle registration fees. The latest subplot in the story is about how highway user revenues are shared between counties and the state. In the old days, counties and Baltimore City received almost 30% of the transportation trust fund as highway user revenues. The 2008 Great Recession killed that formula. In 2017, things looked up a little, and after adjustments this year, the number stood around 15% and was expected to rise to 20% before settling down at about 18%. But the state's Department of Legislative Services has proposed cutting it back down to less than 10%. The jurisdiction most affected would be Baltimore City, which uniquely has a responsibility to maintain state roads within the city. In the 23 Maryland counties, the State Highway Administration carries that burden. I called Baltimore delegate Mark Edelson to ask what solutions he had.
There are a significant number of proposals in the legislature this session right now to raise a significant amount of revenues that would result in us not needing to make significant cuts going forward. So for example, you know, and I would say, you know, the leadership in the House, Chair Ben Barnes, Appropriations Committee Chair, has said multiple times that we are committed to raising revenues to keep our commitments to the programs that we've put in place and the ones we want to put in place, whether that's fully funding the blueprint, building the red line, public safety, you know, the Governor's Enough Act. All of these commitments that we've made to the people of Maryland are going to require revenue in order to not have to cut these programs. And there's a lot of proposals in the legislature right now. Chair Cormann, chair of the Environment and Transportation Committee, has a bill in to increase fees on deliveries. There's a bill in to optimize tolls. Chair Barnes has one to increase fees on cigarettes and alcohol. There's one on finally getting fees from EVs, right, which we don't do at all right now. There's the Fair Funding Act, which would raise $1 billion, if not more, a year that, Delegate Polakovich Carr and Senator Hennelman. And so the combination of these in their totality would and will raise a significant amount of revenue.
Do you really think that there will be a new tax this year?
That's ultimately a decision between leadership in the House and the Senate and the governor. But my point to you is simply to say, if the choice that we are giving ourselves right now is make cuts or nothing, my point to you is simply that's a false choice.
It's okay not to concur, but you have to offer some solutions. So what is the solution that you're offering?
Right. But the current DLS recommendation is based on an alternative plan sort of for the future, right? This particular recommendation is not a we need to cut highway user revenue to this percentage in order to balance the budget for this year. Even if we're not able to find those levels of resolution this year, we do not need to concur in the DLS recommendation right now to balance the budget.
Mark Edelson, thank you for taking the time.
Of course. Thank you so much.
We end with a bizarre local media story. The Montgomery County Sheriff's Department, which is different from the police department and supports the county's judicial branch, knocked on the door of Eric Saul at 1 a.m. on February 20th. Saul is a local architect, baseball coach, living kidney donor, general political loudmouth, smart aleck, and founder of a satire website called the Tacoma Torch. The sheriff's department served Saul with a peace order, which is a version of a restraining order in Maryland, based on a complaint by another local media personality, Ryan Miner, who alleged harassment. Based on that complaint, the local district attorney, known as the state's attorney in Maryland, charged Saul with criminal misdemeanor harassment. Saul and Miner have been trading barbs on Twitter for some time, but it is unclear what pushed things over the edge this time. In a non-ironic editorial on the Tacoma Torch website, Saul laid out what happened in detail, called to question Miner and the state's justice system for serving him with a restraining order and criminal charges. How could this have happened? Saul said he had never been in proximity to Miner. Maryland criminal code on harassment requires malicious conduct or following the victim in a public place without legal purpose. Saul said he had never had direct electronic communication with Miner either, which is required under Maryland law to rise to online harassment. And then he argued that he had legal purpose because he runs a satirical website to call Miner, a local public figure by his own claim, a misogynist shithead. If only name calling on Twitter was a crime. Turns out that Maryland does not have any way to screen complaints such as the one Miner made. You can walk into a district court 24/7, file a sworn, and I repeat, sworn complaint to harassment, and the on-duty district court commissioner can authorize a peace order and file charges. Then these will be served on the accused by the sheriff's department anytime, day or night. The local Montgomery County state's attorney's office quickly washed its hands off the whole thing and claimed no involvement. Ryan Miner wrote a public apology to Eric Saul and has said that he will withdraw the complaint. But the withdrawal of complaint is not really in Miner's hands once it is filed. Prosecutors in the state's attorney's office are unlikely to pursue, including, mind you, any prosecution of Ryan Miner for filing a wrongful complaint under oath, which is tantamount to perjury. What has become clear is that Maryland, not just Montgomery, lacks any serious screening of complaints that result in peace orders, criminal charges, and 1 a.m. knocks on the door by the sheriff. A system created to protect mainly domestic violence victims is and can be abused. And worst of all, state's attorneys are not known to pursue perjury charges against individuals filing wrongful complaints. There are simply too many. If Eric Saul wants full remedy, he will have to sue Ryan Miner himself. That's all for this episode. You're listening to I Hate the News from I Hate Politics. Be sure to tune in here at I Hate Politics this Friday for our big feature interview of the week. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, with assistant producers Daniel Galeo and Katarina Gasek, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from DC songwriter and composer Oren Levine and the band Lucky So-and-So. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. See you next time. That's where it draws from. Don't know you to touch you or clutch you. Better not rush you. I'm saying just hush too. Wait.